The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User-Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User-Friendly 2.0. I'm your host, Bill Sickens. With me, Gretchen and Bill. Welcome to this week's show.
Hello there.
Howdy.
So we're going to be talking publishing, as we have been a little bit off and on over the last couple of weeks. We actually have two people that are in the local area or home area that are having books that are coming out. Kay Thompson, who was on the show a couple of weeks ago, is coming back to answer some of your questions in the next segment. And person number two is Gretchen, who's in the final draft of her book. The final approval, I guess, would be. It's not a draft anymore, really.
Yeah, no, it's
whatever the terminology is, but it's getting finished. So there you are. And we'll keep everybody up to date on that. We're also going to be talking Wi-Fi 7 a little bit. This was our Tech Wednesday topic this week. And, oh, you didn't hear Tech Wednesday? Well, check it out, userfriendly.show. They're all out there. You can also get that on your smart speaker flash briefing. The information on how to subscribe to that is also on the website, userfriendly.show. Check that out. So what do we have in the news this week?
All right. U.S. warns of cyber attacks against water systems throughout the nation.
So infrastructure vulnerability is something we've talked about, and many others have too, because there is a lot of exposure in our systems, especially with things going digital, power, water, and all of those different type of things. And we've seen some internet hits recently that probably could be partially a cyber attack, whether they want to admit to it or not, when you have these weird things. The latest one of those being McDonald's going down for an entire day all over the world.
Yeah.
We can get our Big Mac, you know. So, but in all seriousness, these things are happening. But this is something that's a lot more serious in the sense that it could take out infrastructure. The threats are from hackers linked to the government of Iran and China. At least that's what they're saying. And this has come out from the Environmental Protection Agency. So what can you do about it? Not much. Just be careful. The one recommendation that they have is to go to their website and get a list of what to do in case the water does go out. Mainly what that talks about is having some backup water on hand, and it talks about the amounts and all that kind of stuff, as well as what to do if you think that you see a problem and how to get information on, if there is one, what's going to happen.
New Gmail security rules. You have 14 days to comply, Google says.
I mean, I am Borg. You will comply.
Yeah, something
this feeling here, and it is Google, so they kind of are. All right. So what this is actually something that we talked about a little earlier in the year, that Google and Yahoo also are locking down on what they call mass email senders. And for anybody that missed that show, basically what it is that they want to have more control over spam. And what they're doing is requiring anybody that sends a lot of emails, and the actual numbers to this are available from Google, that if you meet these thresholds to be able to send these mass emails, you have to set up certain things on your system, specifically on your domain registration, to authenticate it properly. And if you don't do that, the email you send will not get to the receiver. The idea being here is this will help to, they say prevent, I think reduce might be a better word, spoofing of email addresses and some other things like that. Google says from their internal statistics that their AI protection stopped more than 99.9% of spam, phishing, and malware-carrying emails from actually reaching their users. So to put that into context and what we're actually dealing with here, that's about 15 billion with a B emails a day. So that's a lot.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, this will probably make it better. I know I've set this up for our clients through Weir Technology that use email and fall into these things. It wasn't even really that difficult to do. And the other thing that was interesting, it didn't cost anything. So it's just a matter of going on, getting a certificate, and then securing it with your domain register. But that is coming up. If after April 1st, your emails don't go out and you send a lot of them, well, check your settings, because you might have fallen afoul of this and need to get things set back up so that you can continue your business.
Okay, this one sounds like it might be related. Google's new bulk email guidelines incentivize better digital business-to-business strategies.
Yeah, I think there might be a connection there. I think you called that one right. So what they're talking about here is the idea that once bulk email and all of this stuff goes into effect on April 1st, that it's going to force in some ways a lot of businesses to rethink, if they need to, how they deal with their business to business. So instead of just sending out a bunch of emails that may or may not be read or may not be something that someone wants to see, they're actually going to need to start going through and thinking through targeting specific people, making sure the subscriptions are accurate, all of the different things that you would do so that the email that gets to the users is actually something that they would care about. And I know for a long time, Google and others, Gmail has had a area of your inbox that's specifically for advertisements. And I think they call it promotions or something. Anyway, it's a tab that anything that Google decides is an ad goes under that tab. And then if you want to look through the promotions, you can, but they're not in your general inbox. So the thing of it is when you look in there, there's generally a lot of emails, and sometimes things you do legitimately sign up for, like as a, for example, I get a coupon from Home Depot every once in a while for a discount, great clips for haircuts, stuff like that, that I do want to get. Those also go into the promotions. Now, this isn't spam. It's a part that it's not trying to block it. It's just trying to sort it out. So the idea being on this, that if the new guidelines go into effect, it might create a situation where these companies and others would be able to better target who actually wants to get their emails and then keep them from being blocked or put into a place that somebody potentially wouldn't see them. Where this really gets important is to consider that, you know, if you're a big multi-million, billion-dollar business, okay, but smaller businesses tend to rely on direct email marketing a lot more. And from that kind of a standpoint, it's going to help, I think, small business to be able to sit down and kind of rethink these things a little bit more than the bigger ones. But anyway, that's what that's talking about. And it is going to change the direction of this a little bit, or perhaps a lot, depending on what business is doing what with their email.
Someone is killing the Jedi in the Acolyte trailer.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh, Jedi. Gretchen, you're up.
All right. Okay, so I watched the little trailer because I was curious, and I'd seen some of the articles about what this series is supposed to be about, and I didn't really care what I'd seen in the past. So I thought, okay, I'll watch the trailer just to kind of get an idea of, is this going to be a train wreck? Is this going to be good? You know? And I'm still
not... Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
For anybody that doesn't know, including me, what is The Acolyte?
It's another series based in the Star Wars universe. And this is obviously, along the lines of trying to follow in the footsteps of The Mandalorian, which was very successful. So, you know, they're trying to kind of, you know, follow the formula.
Okay, so it's another, is it live action or a cartoon?
It's live action. Yeah.
So it's a live action series in the Star Wars universe. I know it's coming out June 4th, I think.
The only other
thing I saw in the description preparing for this was Welcome to the Dark Side. So I'd probably like it.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead and continue. But because if anybody hasn't heard of this, they're not going to know what you're, you know, referring to.
Well, but some of the premise of how things work, sometimes, you know, it was very confusing on the original discussions that I'd seen. Stuff about making a force god and just stuff that just doesn't make sense. But from the trailer that I saw, it actually looked intriguing. And that if they actually follow with that kind of mindset where it's like a mystery and there's Sith and there's Jedi, you know, trying to figure out what's going on, then it could be a good show. So I think we're all just going to have to watch it and see what we think.
That's good. Yeah. You know, I'm still brushing up on my Star Wars. I recently learned that Palpatine was a senator. So, you know, there's things that there's new stuff out there. But in all seriousness, this falls before the prequels, from what I understand, that in the timeline.
It should really be in the Old Republic.
Okay.
Because the the Sith are still around. Right?
Right. Now, Bill, I know you cosplayed a character from that, I think, didn't you, at some point?
Yeah. So, I have a Revan cosplay.
That's right. I remember that. So
yeah.
So Old Republic's like long before the sequels, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's long before the prequels.
The prequels. I said the wrong word. Prequels.
Okay. if it's after the sequels.
No, it's prequels. I used the wrong word. It's okay. Prequels. It's before the prequels. Yeah. Now that we're more confused on that than before.
So then I guess we really need to watch it to figure out if this is good or bad. So, okay. You know.
All right. So another series, you know, they've been actually more or less doing a good job with these, in my opinion. So we'll have to actually check it out. I know that I've been told I need to watch the season 3 of Bad Batch. So I think I'm going to finally make that happen pretty soon.
Bad Batch is awesome. Okay. Let's get back to the news.
All right, back to the news.
New phishing attack uses clever Microsoft Office trick to deploy NetSupport RAT. What's a RAT?
I think it was easier to talk about Star Wars. All right, so what's going on here, because that was a mouthful, is there's another phishing thing, a Trojan called NetSupport RAT. Okay. So... for anybody that works with servers and stuff, this will make a little bit more sense, but I'm going to give just a real brief overview of where this is coming from. Is there are a number of tools that are used for running servers, whether cloud-based or on-site, you know, and Windows Server has been out for a very long time, so there's a lot of different things out there that deal with it. But recently, there's been a lot of attacks on some of the tools that are used within these different environments. And while the security on the operating system and all that stuff, cloud-based or not, might be really good, if you can find a way in through a third-party application or something like this where you're allowing something that is legitimate, and the actual legitimate tool that this comes from is NetSupport Manager, so it's something that anybody that administers a server will have worked with, to be able to manipulate things and then distribute itself throughout this. And there's a lot of problems now with growing abuse of cloud platforms, popular content developer distribution networks, and all of that kind of thing. Clear, Dropbox, GitHub, and some. We've talked about this a little bit in the past on the show, but it's getting to a point where they're now coming up with a thing on the dark web that is something called malware as a service. So you can go in, figure out what you want to do, subscribe to software just like you would on the legitimate side, and then be able to come up with some of these things, which is where this actually came out of. And so it's interesting when on the dark web, sometimes you have better customer support on some of these sites than you do on the legitimate ones. But that's how big business and how much money ransomware and all of these other things are generating. So, you know, again, it's something to be careful about. This is something that you'll have to worry about more if you're operating a server. And if you do, you'll probably know how to deal with it. So it's not a change your password and everything will be okay thing, but it is something to be aware of because there's a lot going on with the way that the internet works. There's a lot of different moving parts, and the security is only as strong as its weakest link, to use that analogy.
C++ creator reboots White House warning.
A couple of weeks ago, we talked about a statement from the White House that was part of a publication that it would be a good idea to move to what they call more secure software, such as Rust and some other languages like that. C++ and C were cited as two examples of languages with what they call memory safety vulnerabilities. In other words, they're easier to be hacked. And for that reason, they were saying that it's time to move away from that. Now, the only thing of it is with that is C and C++ are two of the most common programming languages, and they've been used for a very long time. So there's a lot of it around. Well, to that extent, the creator of C++ is coming out and saying, well, this is not entirely true based on the version you're using. And yes, if you use the original version that was released in 1979, it's not going to be secure. but a modern implementation of C++ or a derivative of it is secure as long as you follow proper programming procedures. Now, as a programmer myself, I can tell you straight up that we have gotten very lazy in the way that we control memory because we have a lot of it. We don't have to do like we used to and be all that worried about it. But what comes into that is a lot of times things that aren't correct or something that was put in there that doesn't need to be there or ways of handling your memory where it's not quite secure. And anybody that's programmers is going to go, I know I'm going to get comments back. Well, you're not describing that well. To dig into it would take a lot more time, but just as a 10,000 foot view, a lot of our industry, I think, has gotten a little lazy in the way that we handle this. So a big part of keeping things secure is to make sure that you write your code properly. If you're not using something anymore, get rid of it. Don't just, you know, leave it there and kind of to be abandoned and so on. And that's where that came from. So again, the dispute is that C++ is secure as long as you do it right, which I do think I have to agree with that statement. But if you're using bad programming techniques, aren't following what are called best practices in the industry, or using something really old, then yeah, you could have a problem. And in all likelihood, probably will.
Apple's surprise update just made iPhone more like Android.
Yeah, I thought this was a funny headline for this. This comes from Forbes, which I've seen over the years. It's a little, leans a little more Android on that, you know, religion of Apple and iPhone and Android. But what's going on here is they've released an update. They want to get an AI like everybody else does on the phones. And they've contracted with Google to be able to use Gemini, previously known as Bard, and OpenAI with ChatGPT to power this. So now the responses and all the different type of things like that on your Android are going to be very similar on your iPhone. So there will be a general feeling there. Now, not to fret, the general operating environment in iOS 18 is not going to change to look like Android or anything like that. It'll still be an Apple, but you're going to see some functions and some features that will feel familiar on both platforms.
Britain test fires first laser weapon.
So yeah, this ain't sci-fi or anything, is it? And of course, it's called Dragonfire, you know, so we've got to have that that term. So British military is actually coming to the front where they are using laser weapons or energy weapons, just like you might see on Star Trek or whatever. And it actually seems to work quite well. It blasted a huge hole in the side of a metal plate in the test. And the device to be able to do this, while it certainly doesn't fit in the hilt of your lightsaber yet, will fit on a ship. And it's not huge. And the power supply is not as big and bulky as they were. So they're starting to get something that actually could be, you know, something that's out there. And one of the other things about these kind of weapons, which makes it more desirable when they need to be used, is the fact that you don't need ammunition in the same way you do.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like guns and stuff like that. So if your military is fighting a war, they could use something like this where they're not having to develop. And if they run out, there's a problem, you know, like what's been happening in Ukraine and that type of thing. So it's certainly a different approach. It's certainly welcome to the future a little bit here. And the UK Ministry of Defense has a great video of this working up on their website. And if it's something you're interested in, check it out, because it is very striking to see how it works.
All right. Harry Potter actress Miriam Margolyes, hope I'm saying her name correctly, says that adult fans should grow up.
Yes. And not that I ever give my opinion on our news topics or anything, but that's absurd.
Yeah.
What she's talking about is that it is childish to do things like cosplay. So if you're into Harry Potter, she picked on somebody that did a Harry Potter themed wedding.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, I think what this actually needs, you know what, next week, let's have a conversation on cosplay and we can dive into this a little bit, because the reality of the situation is when we go to comic cons and stuff, there are many families and children there, but I would say the bulk of people are adults.
Yep.
And I don't know how cosplaying a character that you like is all that different from wearing a jersey for your favorite football team.
Exactly.
You know, and some of these things, it's just doing what you like and doing something you enjoy. And frankly, there is nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, so anyway, so I think if everybody hasn't figured it out, I am somewhat opinionated on that comment. I don't know if you guys disagree,
Oh, no. I put it forth because I wanted to have a discussion about this.
No. All right. So next week, we're going to talk a little cosplay. We'll make sure we do that and get some more information on this. And then also talk about some of the stuff coming up this year, because we've got some cool things, too. And on the positive side of that, there's really some, you know, COVID's over and people have been wanting to get back to these. And there's some we've lost some of our events because of that, but we're getting some really cool new ones now, too. So it's definitely worth the conversation, which is going to give some variety and stuff to check out, you know? So I think, spoiler alert, user-friendly and our team likes cosplaying. So if you listen, we're going to have a positive, not a negative presentation on that. But there is a lot to talk about and some cool things coming up. So, all right. One of the other things that we wanted to touch upon in this segment before we go to our break is what we talked about in Tech Wednesday. And a number of questions have come in about this, and it is Wi-Fi 7. So there's been a lot of confusion lately about all this because, and rightfully so, because it's, there's just numbers and things all over the place. And when Wi-Fi first started out, and for many years, there were a lot of problems where you'd have dead spots or it wouldn't work right or it was extremely slow. And in those days, you had a designation that was given by an organization called IEEE, which would be 802.something.
Oh, yeah.
Usually numbers and letters. And what that denoted is what the capability of that version of Wi-Fi is. So it's important to understand that Wi-Fi, just like computer software and a lot of other things, has different generations. And as that's kind of come together, what we would have used even 10 years ago now, if you tried to use that, you would pull your hair out. And at one time, your Wi-Fi router maybe handled 5 devices. You know, and that was a big deal because you had your laptop and then maybe later your phone. But today with smart homes and everything else, you need a lot more.
Yeah.
And mesh networks and some things like that also help get rid of the dead spots. So they started doing the versions with a number instead of the letter number designation. And I believe that was with what would have been called Wi-Fi 5. The first real mesh networks that were used in that way. They existed before that, but it was more commercially available at that. And the latest, greatest up until recently has been Wi-Fi 6 or 6E is the latest version of that. And the differences between those, if you want to dive into the actual technical parts, is the frequencies they run on, how many bands are available, how many devices can be used. So the 6E, which is what I use, is pretty good. I actually get a faster connection on Wi-Fi than on my wired network now with less latency. So it works pretty well. So Wi-Fi 7 would be the next upgrade on this. The problem that I have looking at this, and I know that new technology usually costs more, but this is way more for a 3-pack of an Eero, which is a popular system of these. It's $1,700. And I would say on this that this is something that even if you're an early adopter, it probably makes sense to wait for the price to come down, because while this certainly offers more speed, your wireless is up to 4.3 gigabits and it will support 10 gigabit wired. So there are reasons why this upgrade someday will make sense if you need 10 gigabit wired, which at some point we might. But at the end of the day, I think we're going to see the price of this come down a lot. And at that point, it might be worth considering the upgrade. But if anybody does spend the $1,700 and gets this, please email us, userfriendly.show. I'd love to hear if you think it's better and if you think it's worth the investment. So we'll have to check it out and we'll keep on top of that. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Have you seen him? He's from the future. He's got a really big computer. And he uses it every day. And he uses it in every way. What's he use it for? You know I'm not that sure, because it uses future technology. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Check out our website. It is your one-stop shop to get all the information that is user friendly. Tech Wednesday's out there. Our articles are out there. We need to actually publish a few more of those now that we're back to doing that, but you can find the latest and greatest things there. And also the ability to listen to past seasons, podcast, and everything else that is user-friendly. And we have a guest coming up in this segment who is doing a book signing. She was on a couple of weeks ago, and we had a lot of your questions come in, so we're going to be answering some of that. But because there's been so much interest in where and when and all of that type of information, userfriendly.show, we're going to have a button on the top of the page. It's going to be a map, the times, and the details you need to attend the book signing. So instead of having to just look at the social media, go ahead and check it out there along with everything else. So that being said, Gretchen, I'm going to actually kind of put you on the spot. Where are we at with your book?
We're to this process of getting the second proof. And then we need to okay that, and then I guess it's a go.
Yep, that's exactly where we're at. See, I knew the answer to that question before I asked it.
Yeah, I know.
But in all seriousness, that is exactly where we're at. The second proof is in. So what they do is they send back an actual physical copy, and then or a couple of them in our case, and then the idea is to go through that and make any final changes and put that in again. And since this publishing is a little bit different because it's not self-published, there's going to be that where it's print on demand and you can get it that way. But there's also going to be in about a month where you can buy a standard paperback book and it's going to be released on Kindle. So there's a number of different things that are going with. And it's actually interesting. It's the first time I've dealt with this, seeing what really goes into the formatting, things like creating the covers and all the other stuff that's in addition to just the book itself. So hey, Richard, are you excited to see this finally?
Part of me is like, is this really happening?
Yeah, and but boy, is there a lot involved. And I think with that, let's go ahead and go to Kay Thompson's interview here. And we're going to dive into that. And one topic that does come up here that I think is kind of cool is if you're an author or would like to be, what has everybody gone through? I mean, you know, because it is a lot of work. So with no further ado, let's go to the interview. Joining us now, author Kay Thompson, who is in the process of publishing a book and has a signing coming up here in a little bit. Kay, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me again.
It is a pleasure. We've had a lot of questions that have come in from our listeners, and I will get to that in a few minutes here. But before we do that, why don't you go ahead and give us the 411 on your book and the signing and what's happening?
Okay, so my book is called The Dragon Fantasy, and my book signing is going to be on April 5th from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Chapters Books and Coffee in downtown Newburgh during the First Friday Art Walk. And so my book is basically just a young adult fantasy, and there's a lot of like really interesting characters, and so dragons and humans, of course, you know, it's a very, very popular genre, so it was one of the reasons why I wrote young adult fantasy. And so I have like a whole notebook of how, because it's the first book in the series, so there's going to be four books and then there's going to be a spinoff series, so it's a really big project. So as the series goes along, mysteries unfold and everything. So the first book, definitely need to get that. So it's about, you know, dragons and humans, their relationships, you know, kind of form. The dragons can take on a human form stuff. So they're human form in the story. Their human forms are very, like, otherworldly. So they're just, like, they're different. But they look human, but you just get that aura about them. So you can tell in the book that it's, and then of course, a lot of the male characters have that, you know, vibe off them. They're really like good looking. So I kind of, you know, being a young adult, you know, fantasy, like a lot of like teenagers and all that stuff kind of like that, you know, kind of like Twilight a little bit when you, like, you know, get that vibe off of, you know, the certain character and stuff, you know, that, okay, I like this one because this one's hot. I like this one because, so, I mean, yeah. And then, but as the story goes along, like the character's profile changes a bit, you know, they form relationships along the way. And it's just a really exciting because there's a lot of action, a lot of drama. There's a few like dark parts in the series. So, it does get really like juicy as the story goes along. So the first book basically just telling the plot and the plot and the just the explaining the characters a little bit, just introducing the whole thing as a whole. And then the next three books should be like a little bit bigger because there's a lot more going on. So.
Cool.
This sounds like a total parallel like a to what Gretchen's fun. Doing too, in a way, not the story idea, but the series and the way that that's going on. And
yeah,
you know, I got to tell you, from our other interview, I learned one thing. I knew we had authors that listened to the show. I just didn't know how many. And there's a lot of creative people out there. So let's go ahead and like dive into the logistics of this, the publishing process, what supports for writers. And hey, and Gretchen, both jump in on this. What does it take to get published? Let's just start with a broad question there. Okay, I'm going to throw it to you. And then we'll kind of go from there.
Okay. So the publishing process is a very, very long process. So when I first finished my book, it took me about 2 years to finish this book. I had a friend who, it always helps to have a second pair of eyes to read through it and stuff. It's just to make sure that the story flows well. And so it took me a bit, but at least I had another friend who loved to read and everything. So she helped me, edit it a little bit to make sure that it makes sense. Because like when you're writing the book, you just basically want to fill it all in. And then certain genres, you have to have a certain amount of words per chapter So I did a lot of research when writing my book, and that's why it took me 2 years, because, trying to make sure that I got enough words per chapter, enough words throughout the book and stuff. And it's a really, really big process and everything. So after I had finished it, I tried to find different publishers, and a lot of publishers are asking like obscene amounts of money. I did publish a children's book a while back, and I had a publisher that helped me with that, but that didn't do too well because children's books are a little bit like harder because you got parents that are really picky with certain things that their kids can read and whatnot. But he was asking for like $1,300 to get my book published because it's a bigger book. So it's a lot of like money that goes into it. So I'm like, I can't afford that. So I tried to reach out to agents to try to get an agent, because agents pay for it to get your book published, and they take a percentage out of the sales. Well, agents are really, really, really picky with who they, represent and everything, because like, and my experience with reaching out to them is some of them told me my book wasn't long enough, that they didn't think it was going to sell. And a lot of, so I got a lot of rejection, but, I've been told, and, I really believe in this, a no rejection means that it's much closer to a yes. So I kept my positive and everything. Looking on that, I did some research on other famous authors and how they got going and everything. For example, George Lucas. And of course, you have the Star Wars stuff right behind you, Gretchen. George Lucas, like, he got rejected so many times and stuff, because back then nobody believed in all that sci-fi stuff. And so it really is like, a really like good start to look on his history and how he got going, because he believed wholeheartedly that his stuff would sell. And that's why he kept going with it. He kept, he didn't give up on it. And so, so that story of, how he got going and everything, just kind of like, okay, I just need to keep going with this, because like, George Lucas is now a billionaire. Like Star Wars, I can't imagine us being without Star Wars. So
yeah,
it's just a huge like industry now. So, and I don't think my thing would probably be that big, but it's still like a good, like, story how George Lucas got started and everything to, so that is what I look for, to during the publishing process and stuff. So I just kind of keep my head up, keep my positivity on my product. And I believe wholeheartedly that this, my book, will sell. So,
yeah. And just, you know, it's an interesting example because you bring up, I know George Lucas, he had a number of setbacks before he really got things out there. And like you say, at that period, the whole idea of sci-fi was kind of considered, you know, and Gretchen, maybe you can speak to this a little more.
It was considered tacky at the time.
Yeah.
You know, it was considered tacky. And matter of fact, people who, I remember when I was a kid, people who liked science fiction and fantasy were looked down upon.
Right.
So, yeah. So him going through and trying to push through his ideas, it was extra tough because that was the attitude.
Right.
You know,
and it takes a lot of patience. And Gretchen, I'm going to throw this one to you. You're about to be your Cyberhawk series is about to get the first book published. And as we're mm-hmm. recording today, I think we're getting the final draft on that back from the publisher this Friday. We record on Wednesday. You'll be hearing this on Saturday. So it'll be yesterday at that point. But has your process been similar to what Kay was just talking about? And what's some of the advice you could give some of our listeners for this?
My process has been a little bit different, but there is some similarities. It's the don't give up, you know, and finding that other person to help go through your stuff. That really helps. Having a trusted friend. Mm-hmm. I actually took creative writing classes in college and I didn't find that trusted friend there. So, you know, just kind of keep an eye on things. And if you have a bad vibe about somebody, find somebody else. And, but don't give up. And I think that is really a key, part of this and finding agents that has always been difficult. Mm. Even when I started, when I was, I don't know whether I was a late teen or 20 some years old, I had stories that I had actually copyrighted and sent off to a publisher to try and get published. And, you know, you printed out this huge stack of paper and you wrapped it up and you sent it off in the mail. And then Del Rey goes, yeah, I don't want that. And so you just wasted all that money sending that thing, right. You know? And that was when we didn't have digital. It was hard copy. And so I basically gave up for quite a few years. And then it was only about, maybe about 12 or 13 years ago that I decided, maybe I'll try this again. And I was lucky enough to have my husband to be able to bounce ideas off of him. I actually read aloud to him and he would go, oh, no, we need more action here. Those Mandalorians need to be shooting more or, you know, or this isn't explained well enough. And that really helped. So having that buddy, that person you can count on, that's really important.
I get the distinct impression the Mandalorians would like to be shooting more too. So you're probably on a good track with that. So, you know, you talk about money and stuff. And okay, I'm going to throw this at you first. Is support for writers. Wait, have you found, is there a support system or have you really just had to go it alone? What would you advise on that?
So I would, advise that, you know, a lot of, writers just find, like Gretchen said, find that one true friend or that one person in your life that supports you as a writer. Cause most people know, and most people who aren't writers and all that stuff know that it's a really difficult industry to get into. So they try to tell them to give up, tell them to find a different path, tell them to get the real job. And of course, yeah. You have to have a real job on the side because you're not going to make much in the beginning. And that's another thing is like doing that and a full-time job on the side. It's really hard. So having some support from somebody that actually understands what you're going through. That's why I like to be, you know, connected with other authors out there because they know what I'm going through. They know what, you know, how hard it is and stuff, but they still are trying to do what I'm doing. You know, I'm trying to like, you know, get my, you know, stories out there, get people reading it, you know, that stuff. And I'm really terrible with advertising and marketing.
Me too.
But yeah, it's really, really hard. But it just takes, you know, having that, you know, support, you know, I get a lot of support at my job. A lot of people are just like in awe because I actually published a book because they believe that that's a really good accomplishment.
Spoiler alert, it is.
Yeah. But like I said, the entertainment industry is, you know, hard to get into. I mean, you look at like singers and actresses that they have like things like American Idol, America's Got Talent, and a lot of talent agencies and stuff. They have a lot more outlets than us writers do. It is really like hard for us writers to get started. I believe that, you know, the hardest things to get into, like, you know, entertainment industry, once you're in it, you're in it. Like, people know you, people know your work, people, you know, that's it. So I believe that, you know, a lot of the hardest things that you have to get into are worth, you know, putting that effort into it, because, it's a lot of work, but it's worth it in the end.
Now, Gretchen, you said you had stopped writing for a number of years. What got you to start again?
I had a friend who had suggested NaNoWriMo. It's this weird thing that people do in November, and they just write stories. And I thought, okay, well, whatever. I'll just give it a shot, you know, just for the fun of it. And I did that, and I actually wrote a really good story, but I didn't follow my procedure. Normally, I write an outline of a story before I start to write it. And that way, I know I have the whole thing planned out. Well, with the NaNoWriMo thing, I just went full bore and just, you know, wrote this story. And it turned out really good, but I don't have an ending for it. And I still have it. You know, and it was actually how I managed to get someone to be interested in being my agent, and he really liked it. The only problem was, is it wasn't finished. So I showed him some of my other stuff, and he liked that stuff too. Then he passed away, and so it's like, don't let your agent pass away.
Yeah, and that was a bummer too, because it was somebody, you know, you work with people, and I can even speak to this, and you kind of start to become friends and know each other a little bit. Yeah. And how that happened is difficult. It's certainly a setback.
He was a really nice guy, super busy.
But, I think that us writers just need to stick together. I mean, we need to form like some kind of like writing, you know, group to, you know, just basically, you know, support each other and stuff. And that's why I like to stay in contact with other writers out there, because it's, you know, hearing about their stories and hearing about what they're going through and stuff just kind of makes me feel like, okay, I'm not alone in this battle. So
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. You know, Kay, that's an interesting segue, because I know you're talking about doing some of these type of programs. Tell us a little bit about what's upcoming for you, your business, what's your path forward?
So my business, I do already have it registered with the state. It's called Passion for Ink Publishing. And so I want to help writers like myself get published and get into the industry a lot smoother and a lot nicer. So I already have like a business model all written out and everything. So I want to give authors like myself an outlet. I want it. Kind of like singers and actresses have that outlet for, you know, out there. I want to give us writers that opportunity, because knowing what, you know, writers like myself struggle through and everything, we should not have this much difficulties trying to get into this industry. We should have more of an outlet. So trying to help writers like myself, and but opening up the business is a lot harder than it looks. So,
there's
a lot of money that goes into easy. It. Yeah. So it just, I really want to help authors like myself, you know, get into it, because I had to publish my book on Amazon because Amazon's free. You can publish it on, you know, because Amazon gets a lot of money as it is. So that's why they offer free publishing. because I couldn't get published with any other publishers because they were asking for so much money. And then agents are super picky. So I had to like really like try to do this on my own because, and I noticed, you know, a lot of writers are just publishing on their own and stuff. And like the last interview we had, that most writers are just doing it on their own, like, you know, writers from Comic-Con and all that stuff. You mentioned that in the last interview. But yeah, so I just feel like, you know, us writers are like pretty much on our own. So I want to be that support system for a lot of the writers out there.
And we're going to talk about that going forward too, after the book signing. I know, you know, one thing at a time. So, all right. We had a number of questions come in from the last interview of where this is specifically and that type of thing. So I think what we're going to do is go to userfriendly.show. There'll be a button with a pop-up that's going to have a map. It's chapters, books, and coffee in Newburgh. And I highly recommend anybody come out because, first of all, First Friday in Newburgh is a great thing just anyway. And then Kay's going to be there with the book, which is going to make it even better. And it's just a fun thing to do. It's a fun time and, you know, get to actually meet. And now, are you going to have copies of your book for sale at the signing? Or how will that work?
So I think Chapters Book is going to provide coffee because, like, they sell coffee and then they have the ice cream shop right next, you know, inside the store.
I'm sorry. Coffee. And yes, coffee and ice cream copies. So in other words, can I buy a copy copies of your book at the signing?
Sorry. Yes. I will have copies of the book. I will have like quite a few copies of my book at the book signing and that people can purchase.
That's great. And Kay, awesome. Just to speak to what you were starting to talk about there, Chapters has a coffee shop and an amazing ice cream shop as part of the bookstore. So it's kind of this unique setup where all these things are together. We stumbled upon them 2 years ago and kind of like, this is a neat place. So that's where all of that comes from. But yeah, so come on out, have a coffee and get a copy. And hopefully there's enough clarity on this recording that you'll be able to hear that properly. So anyway, so we'll get that out there. And we're also going to put a link. I know you sent us a QR code, which we put out in our social media. I'll put that on the website as well, so everybody can get to it. So userfriendly.show, and it'll be at the top of the screen there. Just click on it and you'll get a pop-up with all of the details. And like I said, come on out. It's the 5th of April, 5 to 7 in Newburgh at Chapters. All right, Kay, thank you so much for joining us. And, you know, I'm looking forward to this, and I will see you on the 5th.
Sounds good.
Well, Gretchen, I think we can agree it's been a lot of work. I don't know, Bill, are you ready to publish your book?
If I had one to publish.
Hey, if you do, we know the process now, you know. But I love Kay's idea of putting together some resources and different things. And after her book signing here in, 2 weeks, I think what we're going to do is sit down and have a conversation and see if maybe, you know, this is something that we can all help with. I know that User Friendly would love to be behind that. And I'm going to throw this question out to everybody that's listening that maybe is working on writing a book or has this. What kind of resources would you like to see available to authors that are starting out, other than a way to get a lot of rejection letters, which seems like that's what happens? But a positive thing, you know, if this was a perfect world, what would you like to have had help with? What do you need help with? Let us know. Submit your comments at userfriendly.show, and we'd love to work that into it. And let's see, maybe we can crowdsource an author's support guild or something. All right. So we'll see where we end up with all of that. And again, the link to get the map and everything to the book signing is at userfriendly.show. It's at the top of the page. You can get your information there as well as the details and everything goes along with it. And we will also update the website for Cyberhawk as soon as it's available for purchase, which will be pretty soon. Until then, this is User Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2013 to 2024 by User Friendly Media Group Incorporated. All rights reserved. Opinions expressed on the show are those of the hosts and guests and not this radio station. Please check out userfriendly.show for airtimes and podcasts.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.